With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
What's going on, people? Welcome to Pain Points, a Chain of Supers podcast, proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. You can find my written work over at chainofsupers.com, or you can catch me on Twitter at Jake Painting, J-A-K-E-P-A-Y-N-T-I-N-G. While the NBA's return is still up in the air, I guess, with everything going on at the moment, we've officially entered Timberwolves off-season mode. That means for us, it's time to put on, you know, our fake GM hats, get into the nitty-gritty of what this off-season could look like. To discuss all of this with me is our first returning guest, Jack Borman. He's newest member of Chain of Supers family. He's doing great work over there right now. So go check him out over at Chain of Supers. And welcome to the show, Jack. Welcome back to the show, I should say. What's going on, man?
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's good to be back. It's been a crazy last 3 or 4 weeks since the last time we talked, but it's definitely good to be back.
Yeah, for sure. It's obviously a lot going on in the world right now. I give, you know, my thoughts, my prayers, all the power in the world to the people who are fighting the racial injustice at the moment over in America and all around the world. There's definitely a lot going on over here as well, which is great to see. So it's more power to the people. I don't want to be a distraction, so that's why last week I didn't do any podcasts, but I thought it's time to get back on the horse and kind of talk about some Timberwolves, and hopefully for the people who do need a distraction, who are fighting the good fight, this can provide some sort of, you know, relief in that respect. Today, we're going to do a My Perfect Off-Season type show where we go through each subsection of the off-season, try and piece together a team for the 2020-21 season. I'll get into some rules and some criteria first before we jump into it. Me and Jack both want to keep it realistic, so unfortunately that means no Devin Booker, no Bradley Beal. You know, Malik Beasley's not getting signed to a 3-year, $9 million contract. We just want to keep it as realistic as possible. There'll obviously be some things that might not happen or that are maybe a little bit of a stretch, but we didn't want to go too over the top. For the draft positions, we both just took one spin each on Tankathon. Jack got the third pick overall with Minnesota's first round pick. I got the sixth overall pick. We'll both get 16 for Brooklyn's pick. Obviously, that could still move when and if the NBA season resumes.
Hopefully, we still have it too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we don't know if, you know, Brooklyn are going to fall out of the playoffs or if they're going to move up, even if they have a good run and end up with the 20th pick or no pick at all. So we'll just go with 16 to avoid confusion, and then 33, which will be Minnesota's second round pick. We obviously need to abide by the salary cap. That means trying to get under the luxury tax line. Minnesota are currently over it just. They don't want to pay the repeater tax next season, as no team wants to, especially one that's, you know, a cellar dweller at the moment in the Western Conference. We're obviously in the current climate, we're unsure what the mid-level exception is going to look like and what the biannual exception will look like, but we're going to stick with what it would be before all this COVID crisis, which is $9.75 million for the MLE and $4 million for the biannual. And obviously, to end it, you have to have 15 players on your roster and obviously a few two-ways. I think we both have a few two-ways in mind, so
Yep, you can have two two-ways in addition to the 15 full-time deals for a total of 17.
Yeah, so 17 players all up. So we'll aim to get to that. Apart from that, it's kind of no holds barred, I guess. So the order is we'll go the draft first, free agency, any waivings that need to be waived from the current roster after that. And then we'll just go through our roster and maybe starting lineups or minute, you know, distribution. So if you've got the third pick, which is lucky for you, Jack, I've got the sixth. So maybe we'll start with your third pick.
Yeah. So for my third pick, this is not a people's pick. I'm not necessarily a man of the people when it comes to the draft. I'm not thinking that Anthony Edwards or LaMelo Ball or, you know, James Wiseman are going to set the world on fire. I took my number one prospect at number three. And that's our friend Onyeka Okongwu, power forward from USC. He's a freshman, one and done guy who went to Chino Hills, played with LaMelo, LiAngelo, and Lonzo at Chino Hills, in LA. Just an overall absolute beast of nature, on both ends of the floor. He averaged 16.2 points a game, 8 boards, you know, almost 4 stocks a game, and shot 62% from the floor, which is just ridiculous. You know, it was had an awesome freshman season on both ends. Overall, it was in the 97th percentile per synergy on the offensive end. Also did a bunch of great stuff on the defensive end, flying around, filling a ton of gaps for a team in USC that was just awful on defense this year.
Yeah, he was a really big part for them on D. Like he was the only reason why they weren't just really bad.
Yeah, his defensive synergy metrics weren't quite as good. So he only graded out in the 37th percentile overall on defense, which I don't think is super reflective of how good of a defender he is.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of noise with synergy defensive profiles, I think, because when you watch him, he's definitely a lot better than 37th percentile. I think he's definitely one of the best rim protectors in the country and versatile kind of defenders in pick and roll and, you know, as a weak side defender as well.
And the whole reason I'm drafting him here is for his defensive potential. I mean, he's already he blows stuff up on defense. He makes up for teammates' mistakes left and right. And obviously, you know, he'll be playing with better defenders at the next level. But being able to plug him in next to a guy like Kat, two guys that are just crazy athletic and can fly around the floor, that both have just unlimited defensive potential. I know that, you know, Kat has his shortcomings on defense, but, you know, the guy's still 24 years old and the sky's the limit for him on that end of the floor just because of his athleticism. But, you know, you get a guy in Okongwu who is a very, very good pick and roll defender, especially when it comes to tagging roll men. He graded in the 78th percentile there, which was what Synergy calls very good. And you can just tell. I mean, he's not a guy that you have to designate to drop coverage. He's agile enough and quick enough laterally where he can get above screens and switch onto ball handlers, but also, you know, be able to come up and hedge and then recover.
I think that's the thing I noticed straight away with Okongwu when I started watching him was that his ability to hedge and recover and get back and still...
And hedge hard,
yeah,
too.
And
like, get up the line.
Yeah, and then still contest shots with verticality when he gets back to the rim. He's super athletic the way, like, just... Not even the way he gets off the floor, which is really impressive, but, yeah, the way he can get out to a hard hedge, get back, and only do it in, you know, 3 or 4 strides and with really, like, really quickly, I think that's a really impressive skill to have and one that would really, you know, be good at the next level.
Yeah, and especially if teams are going to run a 1-4 pick and roll against D'Angelo Russell late in the season.
They will.
You know, or even a 1-5 pick and roll. You know, it's definitely going to happen. We saw it against Toronto, you know, in that one game that Kat and D'Lo played together, and Toronto just killed us in the fourth quarter, in the third and fourth quarter. But you know, I think having the flexibility to hedge really hard, to play ice coverage, to have him drop. I mean, you can have him do just about anything on the floor and he'll excel in doing it. On the defensive end. So, and that's not even to mention, you know, his really great, you know, roll gravity as a screener on offense, really good hands, can go up and catch the ball and finish it in midair, whether it be a layup or a dunk on an alley-oop. And is just a huge presence on offense as well, just with how much space he can take from defenders, and also find teammates. He isn't a great passer, But he also, and especially for a guy that was, you know, a huge centerpiece of their offense, getting swarmed a lot in offense, he's got to become a better passer. But you know, I don't see him really getting swarmed at the next level. So I thought that was just a safe pick in a spot that, you know, might be a little bit of a reach depending on who you ask, but I don't really care. I think that, you know, he's going to be able to step in right away day one and fill some huge holes that the Wolves have, and would just create one hell of a fun starting five. So that was my third pick, Onyeka Okongwu from USC.
So just before we get into mine, what do you think of, I think the obvious question that, you know, that the devil's advocate would ask is, what do you do with Okongwu and the fact that he can't shoot threes?
See, the thing is I think sometimes people have too much of an idealistic view of prospects or of people. Like, would the Timberwolves love to have 5 two-way guys that can all shoot threes and defend multiple positions? Absolutely. You know, I'd love for that to happen. But even the best teams in the NBA, you know, don't necessarily have that. They have certain guys that are more specialists that come in for one reason or another, probably to play defense or, excuse me, to guard, you know, to guard the other team's best player or something like that. And I think that, you know, it's totally fine having a specialist out there. I think that, you know, I think that having D'Lo, Malik, and Kat, that's more than enough offense you need on the floor. And Okongwu is more than capable of, you know, of finishing and playing in a pick and roll and creating for others in a sense of, you know, just using his body to take space and making simple dump off passes to cutters like Beasley and Okogie or even Towns from the corner of the wing, which I think he'll be able to do. So, you know, and he's athletic enough where he can drive to the rim from the outside. And so if he can tighten up his handle a little bit and just be able to make simple passes, I don't think that him not being able to shoot threes will really cause too much of an issue, just because he's really good down low on the block, can totally hang and bang down there. You know, he's 94th percentile on post-ups. So there's a lot of different ways you can use him. And if you say he can't shoot threes, I dare you to go look at the three-quarter court absolute bomb that he had that was, should have been an and one that wasn't.
Yeah, I knew you were going to bring that
and
up.
Tell me he can't shoot threes again. but no, I think that there's a ton of different ways you can use him. If you've got four other guys that are out there that can shoot, I think they'll be just fine.
Yeah, I think if there's one team, I think I know Gerson Rosas obviously has made a point of, you know, filling the floor with shooters around Towns. But I think if there's one team that you can afford to have, you know, a rim rolling for who does all the nitty gritty work defensively and kind of covers the holes that Kat and D'Lo leave in pick and roll, it would be Minnesota, because Kat is such a great 3-point shooter and can space the floor as good as any center and as good as any player in the league, really. So yeah, I think I do agree with you on that. I guess we'll jump straight into mine if you want, just because we could talk absolutely about Okongwu for days. I know we both like him. So I've got pick 6, obviously, and I'm drafting Devin Vassell. He's the wing from Florida State, and he can play the wing spot, I think. He's 19 years old. He's a sophomore. 6'10" wingspan. 195 pounds, so he's quite light, but he doesn't play. I don't think he plays, you know, as a player that you're like, he's really undersized. His wingspan is just enormous. I've spoken about him on the podcast before, so you might have heard me talk about him. He's just an elite, elite off-ball defensive presence. He'd cover a ton of holes on this Minnesota team. I think he's a menace defending from the nail, where he can dig in and stop ball handlers or slow them down, which allows your guards to get back in front of their man. It allows the bigs to get better position on their man or in front of the ball handler, which I think is just a vital skill for a team with D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns, you know, presumably defending 75% of the pick and rolls when they're on the court. He's also just a really good rotation defender, whether it be blocking shots from the weak side. Obviously, he's a wing, so he's not your prototypical, you know, shot blocking, rim protecting big, but he just zones off his man really well to come and to block shots or defend shots at the rim. And he also is just a great rotation defender, as like helping his man, getting out to closeouts, really, really long strides, which means he just covers so much ground. Like we said with the Condor, he just covers so much ground in such little time. When you watch him, you can just, it just glows how long he is with both his legs and his arms. I think he'd just fit seamlessly into this team as a defensive presence. And again, that's without even mentioning his offense, which is pretty damn good. Obviously, I don't think he's a all-round scorer. He doesn't create a ton of shots for himself, but he's a really good three-point shooter. 4.4 per 36 minutes, which isn't really high volume, but he hit 41.5% of those shots. Really good as a catch-and-shoot three-point shooter. Really promising signs as an off-movement shooter, coming off screens, running around the perimeter. He's got a funky-looking kind of release, very high, kind of to the left of his head, but it's consistent, and I don't think it's wacky enough to kind of throw me off completely. It also is really hard to block, because it's so high and he's got such a long wingspan and he's quite a tall guy to begin with.
And how many bad shots have you seen Vassell take he's
just,
this year?
In all of these
games,
you
can probably count on your hand how many bad shots he took, especially from deep.
Yeah, and in all of these games, it's just a really safe game. He doesn't average a lot of assists or make a ton of plays for others, but he never forces the wrong pass. I don't think he ever, like you said, forces the wrong shot. He's a willing passer. When he does get trapped, he's got that really nice one dribble pull up as he gets the, you know, hard closing defender to fly by on the threes. Doesn't get to the rim very well. I think that's probably his biggest weakness at the moment, is he's not a great slasher. But that's the kind of thing you can expect him to work on. I think with those long arms and long strides, he just needs to get a bit stronger, I think. And he'll get to the rim fairly well and start getting to the free throw line a bit more. But just as a low floor guy, which I think Minnesota need, obviously they're not good enough to kind of get best player available. I think they should be swinging for the fences, but I also think that Vassell's got a much higher upside than a lot of people give him credit for. I think he could become a really good, you know, third option on a team, and that is probably as good as you're going to get, I think, from the sixth spot at this draft. It's a pretty weak draft, and he just fills so many holes on this team. He'd immediately become probably the best 3-and-D player on the team. And that's that'd be huge for this team that really needs defensive help.
Yeah, and I think too, anytime you can get a guy that's just really, really, really good in their role, that's what you need, and that's what you're looking for in the draft, especially for someone to be able to do from day one. And like you said, I think the Timberwolves need more 3-and-D wings, especially that offer a little bit more offensively, considering that Culver and Okogie haven't necessarily been the best offensive players. To put it mildly, since they've come into the league. But, you know, I think that both of those guys, I think they will improve on offense. But being able to have a guy like Vassell that can come in and shoot probably a lot better than those two right away will be really helpful. Because if you had those three guys on your team and you have those guys on the team long term and they keep getting better as defenders, a trio of wing defenders like that can probably guard 1 through 4 pretty easily would be awesome. I mean, maybe not Culver. Maybe Culver probably tops out as being able to defend a 3, but Okogie definitely can defend a 4 just because he's got long arms. He's built like a brick house and isn't scared of anybody. And I think he'd fit in very seamlessly in terms of whether you start him or whether you play him off the bench. Can play with just about anybody. And he's a smart player off the ball and doesn't try and force anything. And I think, a guy that I think if a guy has to force stuff a lot at college, I think it can be a tougher transition to an NBA game that's a little bit more free flowing and you kind of have to let things come to you. But he did that in college and was awesome doing that. So I have no doubts that he'll be able to step in and do that right away. And obviously would love to see him in a Wolves jersey next year.
Yeah, I think, like you said, just a really good 3-and-D prospect. And a little stat here, which kind of just cements his, you know, status as probably the best 3-and-D prospect in the draft at the moment. There's 10 players nationwide who bettered Vassell's block percentage and steal percentage. His block percentage was 4.1%. Steal percentage 2.8%. None of those players managed to shoot over 40% from 3, and only one of them even took over 100 threes for the season. So in that respect, I think he kind of separated himself as just a guy who can just make a lot of plays defensively, not only be solid. I think like a guy like Isaac Okoro is maybe a better, you know, on ball defender and a really solid defender. But I don't think anyone in that lottery, you know, in terms of wings, makes plays the same way that Vassell does. He kind of just, so many times you just like, where did he come from? You know what I mean? Like, how did he get that block from the weak side when he was guarding a guy in the corner 2 seconds ago? And I think that's the kind of the wow factor that gets him picked at six here, which might be a little bit of a reach in terms of who you're speaking to, but I'm pretty confident with Vassell at six. I'd be happy with that.
I would take Vassell at four.
Yeah.
I think that's probably, I'd consider taking him at three, just because I don't think anybody's really going to want to trade up in this draft. And again, I don't think that if you look back at it and Vassell ends up being a really good player and you take him at three versus six or whatever, it's all about getting the guy you want. It's not about, you know, taking a guy that you feel like you should take because of the boards. Like I talk about the Wesley Johnson effect, about how, you know, Khan wanted to take Wesley Johnson because, you know, he thought that he was higher on all these boards, so we should have taken him higher than the guy that the team wanted him to take, which is Paul George. And so, yeah, I just think taking the guy you're comfortable in is important. So my next pick I had was 16. And so I just want to preface this. I feel confident saying this. There's zero chance that the Timberwolves are going to make two selections in the first round of this year's draft.
Well, spoiler alert, we both trade this pick. So I think we both agree with that.
Yeah. So it just based on, you know, hearing Gerst talk about these picks as draft assets is what he keeps saying, as opposed to picks. You know, if you really think about it and start looking at the roster and looking at how clustered it is and kind of how gross it is near the bottom, there's just no way you can have three drafted players come into this roster without trying to, you know, make an upgrade somewhere. So I got a little creative here with my pick. And so what I ended up doing was I made a selection for Toronto, and I don't really specify exactly what player they'd be looking for. You know, I'd say they'd probably want a guy like Sadiq Bey at 16. So let's say Sadiq Bey is around at 16. The Timberwolves select Sadiq Bey for the Raptors and end up waiting, you know, 2 or 3 days for free agency to start. Don't sign Sadiq Bey. And then what they do is they do a double sign and trade. So they sign Sadiq Bey, and they trade Sadiq Bey, a future second round pick in 2022, James Johnson, and they throw in, Omari Spellman, and they send him to the Raptors, and we take back Serge Ibaka. So Serge Ibaka, I just think is a dream come true, for the Wolves, having him on a team. The guy shot 40% from three last year, and just fills so many holes and is such a steady Eddie presence, in just so many ways. You know, he's been on a variety of teams. He's been an excellent role player during his time in Oklahoma City, and again in Toronto, and was a huge part of why that team, you know, was able to win a championship last year, and why those Oklahoma City teams were so good for so long. You know, he averaged 16 and 8, which is probably, you know, the best year he's had in terms of those two numbers. You know, he's not having those Ibaka numbers that he had back in like 2011 and 2012, I think, when he went back to back leading the league in blocks. But I ended up thinking that the number for Serge would probably be about 3 years for $52.5 million. He's 30 years old right now, or it'll be 30 at the start of the year. And so that number is slightly above what some people might have him at. But I think if you're really gonna look at bringing him in and want him to stay for long term, I think that number probably has to be a little higher than what some other places might offer him. So I thought that 17.5 was a pretty safe number. Especially sending out James Johnson, you know, it's a pretty easy number to match. So it's not something that you're really cutting further into cap space that you don't have. And sending out, you know, Omari Spellman and Sadiq Bey would also kind of make up for that as well. And you could do the trade either way with signing Sadiq first or not signing him. Either way, it would work with a sign and trade. If you signed him, you'd probably have to throw in, you know, someone at the bottom, maybe like a Jake Layman or someone like that. But yeah, it's a complicated trade that would take some little maneuvering to do. But that was what I did.
And that's the kind of stuff that Rosas and Gupta, you know.
That's the Gupta department.
Yeah, so if anyone could get it done, I'm sure it would be him. I don't mind that. I think Ibaka's a very good player and underrated in terms of the way he's just continued to find ways to be consistent, even like you said, after his athleticism waned a little bit and he wasn't able to block three shots a game. He's still a very, very good defender. He's gotten stronger in positioning and just all around team defense. And he's still a really good offensive player. He probably is, like you said, the best he's ever been offensively. He can shoot threes. He can hit the mid-range. He's still really good in the post. And as a role man, he would probably raise this team's floor more than any player, you know, you could feasibly get, I think. And also, you know, raise their ceiling at the same time. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's the kind of guy who, in your, you know, perfect off-season, comes in and gives the Timberwolves three or four extra wins on his own back, because he's just a really good player and a really, really good fit next to Towns.
Yeah, and I think, too, the biggest thing that I think the Timberwolves are going to need to find if they're going to make a trade is they're going to need to find a guy that's really, really steady that's going to raise the floor, because there are a bunch of guys that could potentially be boom or bust in terms of they either totally skyrocket the Timberwolves' chances of being a long-term, you know, just solid playoff team, which is kind of what I'm looking for. You know, I don't need the Timberwolves to go set the world on fire. Would I love to see them win a championship? Of course I'd love to see them win a championship, but like, let's be real here. And I think that a guy like Serge does exactly that. I mean, he's probably the most consistent role player in the NBA. I mean, just go look at his basketball reference profile. It's pretty crazy how just steady he is.
He's just never been bad.
He's always been a positive impact player, which I think is something that the Wolves need. And if you're going to have these guys that are going to be boom or bust, getting a guy that can raise the floor automatically, whether a guy like Culver or Okogie can improve their offensive games or not, if they do, I think the Wolves become a really, really good team with a guy like Serge Ibaka in there. But if they don't, then Serge Ibaka still, you know, brings a presence and brings tangible skills and stuff on both ends of the floor that really, I think, gets this team into the playoffs. If Serge Ibaka is on this team, I think the Wolves are a playoff team.
Yeah, I agree. Would you, in a hypothetical, if Toronto, you know, demanded kind of Culver in this deal, would that be a deal breaker for you? Or if it was all, you know,
It would, just because, like, I think if you didn't include the pick and you included Culver instead, I still think I would do that. Because I think that Serge does more to help the Timberwolves in the short term than Culver would. And I think you solve your front court problems. And I think that, you know, it allows you to kind of bet more on guys like Okogie and Beasley, just to play bigger minutes. And I think that would also allow for a guy like Jared Vanderbilt to potentially get some minutes and to play Jake Layman more. So I don't necessarily think that getting rid of Culver is the worst thing in the world. And you know, I could be convinced either way about Culver, just because I think that it's tough to give up on a guy when you draft him sixth overall, I think is what they took him at last year. Sixth overall a year later, essentially. It's been the longest year ever, but and I'd love to see him pan out and get better. And I think the last 14 games or so, he showed some massive improvement.
I just don't think you plan your whole future around Culver at the moment when there's a chance that he could be a sunk cost halfway through next year. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And it's like, you don't want to pay Jarrett Culver $10 million in a year or in 2 years. So, yeah. If he doesn't pan out. So I'd be okay with that at this point. You know, if he's still a positive asset, that's great. So yeah, I think that I would have no problem really getting rid of Jarrett Culver if they wanted Jarrett Culver instead of the pick. But I think they'd rather have the pick than Jarrett Culver at this point.
Yeah, and I think that's a pretty good segue into mine, which I know you're going to hate this because we've discussed this before. Is I'm going to trade pick 16, James Johnson, and obviously I think you'd bargain for just Johnson and pick 16. But I'm going to throw in Jarrett Culver as well, which also helps with the salary cap, you know, the salary cap kind of how it shakes out, because when we trade Johnson, Culver, and the 16th pick for Aaron Gordon from the Magic, you'll be bringing in just over $1 million less contract, so that'll save you a little bit of money. Like I said, I know a lot of people that I know and talk to aren't huge fans of Aaron Gordon as well. I think there's some obvious flaws. There's some obvious flaws with his 3-point shooting and even some of the ways he was deployed in Orlando. But I think, first of all, obviously his contract, it's $18 million next season. It does decline the season after, the $16 million, which is actually, again, pretty handy when it comes to salary cap, but it's not ideal. I don't think it's not a deal breaker in my eyes. Obviously, it's not a team hampering contract. I think it's still one that you could move if you had to. And either way, it's only two seasons. After the next season, it's an expiring, and then it's very movable if he does flop. But I don't think he would flop because I think he's a very good defender, very versatile defender, underrated. I think in the general public, he had a really good season defensively. Orlando were 10th in defensive rating. Even after Jonathan Isaac went down, they were still 13th. That's obviously to do with other players, not just Gordon, but that's a front court of Gordon and Vucevic, which I think Vucevic is definitely on the level of Karl Anthony Towns as a defender. So Gordon was able to play next to Vucevic and still, you know, play on a team that has a really good defense or above average defense. He's versatile, can switch between 1-4 with fairly high success rate, which is essential on this team. They don't often switch cat, but they do switch 1-4, which, like you said before, Okongwu, I think, would be pretty good at that as well. He's strong. He can defend the rim in spurts. He's not a great rim protector, but he's definitely athletic enough to block shots and to help as a weak side defender. Has a 7-foot wingspan as well, which helps, you know, some other scorers and get into players in that respect. I think he's a really good fit defensively. Offensively, I know we both have question marks, you especially. I'm going to spend a few minutes right here convincing you. I've convinced myself. I don't know if that's a good thing or not. But obviously, he's not a good shooter. He's never been better than 35% shooter, which was last year. He shot 30% this year from three. He's never been on a team that's allowed him to flourish as a shooter in any way. I think, like, Basketball Index, they have a metric that combines, you know, team three-point accuracy and volume and creates numbers for spacing in the lineup, so an overall kind of spacing metric. Gordon ranks in the 14th percentile league-wide for his career, so, you know, 86% of all lineups in the NBA have had more spacing than Gordon has had throughout his whole career. They often, I think, tried to force a square peg into a round hole with Gordon, making him an isolation player. He relied on a lot of pull-ups from mid-range and three. Got a lot of his buckets in that way, which was an inefficient way to play him. And like they run 3.4 isolation plays a game for him, which is 88th percentile league-wide. I don't think that would be the case at all in Minnesota. I think he'd be a third or fourth option. He'd be cutting, rolling as a pick-and-roll player, using his athleticism to run and handle the ball in transition. And that's where he thrives. I think he shot 79% on all cuts this season. That's 83rd percentile. His adjusted field goal percentage at the rim was 64.2, 81st percentile. He's a really good passer for a power forward. He has the ability to create, you know, from the top of the key or in transition. Really valuable, again, to a team like Minnesota who want to play five out and who want to run in transition and play at that frenetic kind of pace. I think he's just one of them players where there's obvious flaws in his fit, but I don't think the flaws outweigh how much he could raise this. I don't think he's a Serge Ibaka. Like you said, he's not a Serge Ibaka high floor kind of guy, but if they figure out a way to unlock Gordon on both ends, I think that's that's the kind of thing that raises this team to a top four kind of Western Conference team. Obviously not all just Gordon. You still need Towns to improve defensively, right, and all the things that need to happen in general. But hitting on Gordon is the kind of thing that's, you know, that boom or bust. If he booms, that I think that's a really smart gamble to take, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that Gordon's immediate impact would definitely be on the defensive end. I still really don't buy his jump shooting, even in a totally spaced out offense. Kind of just to add on to that a little bit, he was in the 20th percentile in just 3-point jump shots in general.
Yeah, he's not in unguarded
catch and shoot opportunities that have nothing to do with spacing, because you're obviously wide open. He was in the 13th percentile. He shot 27.5% on unguarded catch and shoot jumpers, which I just think is a huge problem. And especially if he's going to have open jump shots in Minnesota, I'd hope that he'd be better in the 13th percentile.
Yeah.
And unguarded catch and shoot opportunities. But the one thing that I do think is really encouraging for Aaron Gordon is he ranked in the 94th percentile in terms of cutting on offense. And I think that's really important because, you know, the Wolves need guys that can cut. I think that was such a welcomed addition when Malik Beasley came. I don't think people really understood how good of a cutter he was, and really surprised a lot of people with how effective and efficient he was on cuts and being able to finish in traffic and draw fouls and finish through contact, which was important. And the fact that Aaron Gordon's able to do that too, I think is awesome. He scored almost 80% of the time he got the ball on cuts. And for a guy that's as physically imposing as Aaron Gordon is, it's 6'9", 230. I think that would be really, really great. And he's really good when he drives to his left hand. I know a lot of time he likes to take one hard dribble right and spin left, kind of the old LeBron special.
Yeah.
And finish with his left hand, and is really proficient at doing that. When he drives to the right, he ranks in the 49th percentile. But when he drives left, he's in the 78th percentile. So I think if you can kind of get him going left a little bit more too, that'd be awesome. And I just think that he definitely needs to be in a better situation than Orlando. I don't think that Orlando is really a great place for him to flourish on the offensive end. I think it really has done a good job of highlighting how good he is on defense and how underrated of a defender he is. Just because I think that when you play alongside a guy like Vucevic, who's such an offensively minded four, and you don't really have any other big defenders that are all that good at defenders, and he has to make up for a lot of it, I think that there's definitely some praise that needs to be had there, just because he's been really good. And I think the biggest addition he could almost provide on defense too is how good of an isolation defender he is. He has no, and especially once Jonathan Isaac went out and he had to guard the other team's best player, did a really, really good job standing guys up on isolation and moving his feet and preventing guys from taking his space and getting to the rim, which I thought was really important. And guys shot 32% on Gordon in isolations, which was awesome, and scored less than 35% of the time. So I think that if he can continue to do that, that would just provide the Timberwolves so much defensive flexibility, and you probably wouldn't have to start Josh Okogie. You probably relegate him to the bench and let him cook on defense with the second unit, which I think would be really helpful. And something that would just be a really nice thing to see for a Minnesota team that has just struggled in so many ways defensively. But the other concern I have about Gordon is his fit in the locker room.
Yeah, which I think is hard to quantify as well.
Gordon is kind of a guy that seems kind of. Yeah, and especially since the Timberwolves are pretty much a team composed of entirely, 19, 26-year-olds with one 33-year-old thrown into the mix. I mean, obviously, you'd be getting rid of James Johnson, but I think there's something to be said for that. I think that, he's kind of an immature guy.
I think there's real question marks over D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns' leadership, for better or worse as well.
Right.
So it's kind of, it might be a volatile trio to have in the locker room, and they're going to be your leaders, in terms of age and status on the court. So I do agree that maybe that's a bit of a volatile situation, but I don't know if it's worth, like you said, that defensive presence that he brings. It's obviously not all NBA defense, but like at some point this team needs to just prioritize players who play defense, and just Karl-Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell are going to give you enough offense. Throw in Malik Beasley in there. You've got an offensive powerhouse, you know, when they're clicking. And if that means that Gordon has to clank a few threes from the corner, but, you know, guard the best forward on the court and raise your defensive rating, you know, even slightly from 29th to 23rd, if he's the kind of player who can come and add that, I think that's more important at the moment than
not. Yeah, I definitely think the pros outweigh the cons there.
Yeah.
I just personally would rather go in a different direction. But again, if that happened, I'm not going to be sitting here getting upset about it. I'm going to be finding ways to get excited about it.
All right. We'll get into our 33rd pick quickly, and then we'll have a break for an ad, and then we'll come back and see what we can do after that. So if you want to get into your 33rd pick.
All right, so with my 33rd pick, shout out Crazy Good Athleticism. Shout out guys who can shoot threes and fly. Shout out one-handed alley-oop dunks. Shout out Duke, the Brotherhood. I took Cassius Stanley with the 33rd pick. You know, Cassius Stanley is one of the guys that just has really, really rare athleticism that jumps off the screen and really you can see it if you're lucky enough to see him play. I saw him play when he was at up in Boston at the game against Boston College this year, and they got off to a slow start, and Cassius Stanley threw down a crazy good one-handed alley-oop from Trey Jones in transition that really got them going. And he's that type of guy that just brings it every single night, and was not really in a great situation that was conducive to his offensive success at Duke, just because, you know, Matthew Hurt was up and down. Vernon Carey would get in foul trouble and couldn't play and would often get doubled. And, you know, Trey Jones, for as good as he was all season, I think that, you know, there were some nights where he just didn't have it. And a lot of the offense had to come from Cassius Stanley, especially when Wendell Moore got hurt. And he really stepped up to the plate. You know, he's not really a guy that, you know, is there to put an entire offense on his back, and you know, I don't think that was something that was really expected of him, but he really excelled offensively. He was in the 85th percentile for overall offense, 88th for transition, 72nd for spot up, and 83rd for cutting, and then the big one was 94th coming off screen. So he's a really good movement shooter, has really solid shot form. So he shot 36% from three overall. But if you break that down and you just look at his catch and shoot opportunities in the half court, 93rd percentile overall and shot 44%, which is awesome. I think he'd have a lot of catch and shoot opportunities in Minnesota. And I don't think that he'd really have to have a lot of movement threes. I think he'd still be able to work on that and get into that. But just because he has such good shot form, I really think that'll translate well. And he's just such an explosive athlete. You know, like I said earlier, and just crazy good jumper. He broke Zion's record, Zion's Duke program record for highest vertical leap, which was 45 inches. And
crazy.
And his was 46 and a half. And so if you took that to the NBA, that would rank tied for first with Zach LaVine. But the big difference between those two is that, you know, Cassius Stanley's athleticism also translates horizontally when he's playing defense. He's really quick with his feet, agile, and does a really, really good job of defending the pick and roll, and was in the 91st percentile, less than half a point per possession, which is awesome number for him, and especially running 2-4, 2-5 pick and rolls alongside Trey Jones, defending that on the balls. It can get over screens, uses his wingspan, loves to jump in the passing lane, is explosive enough to kind of lay in the weeds and then really just pick his spots when he wants to go attack passing lanes and get balls and start going down the other way to create transition opportunities. Those two together, that was a really fun backcourt to watch. And Cassius Stanley is just one of those guys where I just can't believe that, you know, people don't want him or people don't see him as a first round pick. I'd feel comfortable picking him in the 20s, but I really don't think that he's going to go that high just because of everything that I've been seeing. So I scooped him up at 33 and think he would be a guy that probably you'd want to stick him in the G League for part of a season. But I think that he's better than Jalen Noel is right now. And I think that he would be able to play for sure by the start of the 2021-2022 season. And be able to be an impact
player. And like
player.
We saw this season, we, like we saw this season, you never know what's going to happen in terms of, you know, injuries and players getting traded and whatnot. So Jalen Noel ended up playing, I think, way more games than anyone would have expected him to feature in, same as guys like Naz Reid and stuff. So there's always a chance that even if you stick him in the G League this year, he gets a chance, you know, halfway through the season or after the trade deadline or whenever the injury bug does strike, because it seems to strike Minnesota every season. So that it's a really good option to have, I think, Stanley.
Yeah, and especially too when the game will slow down in the half court. Duke played really, really slow on both ends of the floor this year, just because I don't think that they had as many explosive athletes outside of Cassius Stanley to really get up and down. Like they had Zion last year, obviously, and Cam Reddish, which I think Trey loved. He was just able to grab it and go and push the pace, but that didn't happen as much this year. When it happened with Cassius Stanley, it was a sight to behold. And it's definitely something that I could see happening, especially if he played alongside someone like Jordan McLaughlin, which would be cool to see. But again, really high upside guy that I think could be a really, really good two-way player, you know, 2, 3, 4 years down the line.
Yeah. So with my pick 33, I went with Killian Tilly, who's a center, power forward from Gonzaga. He's French, obviously, originally from France. He's 22 years old. I won't ruin too much because I do have an article coming out over the next few days on Tilly. But I think he's a really exceptional fit for this team as a backup center. Oh, I don't think same with Stanley, I don't think in the second round you're going to get anything close to a starter in this draft. I think the best you can hope for is a guy who can provide, you know, value as a rotation player, as a 7th, 8th, 9th man kind of player. Tilly is a great shooter. He's a really good pick and pop big. He shot 44% from three in over 4 years with Gonzaga. He makes plays from the top of the key as a facilitator, just a really, really good high-low passer. Obviously, the Wolves don't run a lot of high-low stuff, but I think that passing touch from the top of the key translates to the five-out kind of role that Towns plays. I think you could stick him in that role that Towns plays and let him play the exact same way. I mean, you don't have to change the system at all for your bench unit or for when your backup center's in the game. Like Towns, he's a really good three-point shooter. He's a sound defender. I think he's got a few mobility issues, and he's definitely a below-the-rim kind of dude, but he's a really smart defender. He moves his feet pretty well. He stays in front of, you know, he stays in front of guys in the post pretty well. He's quite strong, even though he's not a huge guy, but positionally, I think he's just a really smart defender, good team defender, which I don't think he'll ever be a plus-plus on defense, but if you can get, you know, neutral or just plus kind of defense from a guy like him who can really play well on the offensive end, I think that's a good sign. I think he's a better player than Naz Reid. I think if he didn't have so many injuries, which I haven't spoken about yet, but I think he'd be a first round pick if it wasn't for the injuries, but those injury concerns are real. He's dealt with hip pointer, you know, ankle surgery, stress fractures, knee injuries, foot injuries, everything, you know, from the waist down pretty much in his time with the Zags, and that's concerning. I think that's concerning for GMs. I think that's the reason why you'll see him probably go, if Minnesota don't get him in the draft, I think you probably see him go in the late 30s, maybe even all the way to 50, you know, 55, because they have real concerns for a 6'10" guy who's dealt with, you know, 4 or 5 pretty key injuries over the course of his career already. But if he manages to stay healthy, he just does a lot of things that I think Gerson Rosas covets from a center. And I think he's immediately better than Naz Reid. And I think Naz is a good kind of player to have waiting in the wings if Tilly does succumb to a few injuries. But right now, I think Tilly's a really high floor guy as a rotation big.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for Killian is just the health, like you mentioned. You know, a guy that he kind of, every time he hit the floor, you just kind of never knew if he was going to get up. But when he played for Gonzaga, I mean, he was the biggest, you know, most important cog in that machine for 3 years, really.
And they're really good. And they have been really good for a long time.
Yeah.
They had the most efficient offense in the country this year, and he was probably the main part of that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think anytime you get a guy that that shoots like he does and is just as smart, and it sounds so simple and kind of stupid analysis to say, you know, this guy just makes the right play almost every time he's out there. That's just a skill, and I think it's a skill, and it's just something you can't understate. And especially being able to get that in the second round of a iffy draft, is huge. And I'd love to see Killian come in here, and especially if, you know, he got to go and sit in the G League for a year and really just learn the offense and learn kind of where guys are going to be in the spots of everything. I think that he could end up being a total steal, and would really fit in well with not just the Wolves, but also just really solid playoff teams. I could see him being a guy that ends up being like a really good sixth or seventh or eighth guy and a guy that on a really good playoff team.
Yeah. Like you said, I think it's all comes down to health in the end. If he can stay healthy for a 10-year career, he's going to be a guy who plays on good teams and who helps good teams win and who helps bench units thrive as a big man, you know, a good passer, a good shooter, good in the post as well. He's kind of just that all-round offensive talent. He's not going to wow you with athleticism or anything like that, but he's just that kind of, you know, slow, plodding big man who just gets buckets.
Exactly, which is awesome.
So we'll just go into a short break for some ads, and then we'll come back and we'll do our free agency.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right. Welcome back, guys. We've just got through the draft. It's going to be a long podcast, I think, which is fine with me. We can get straight into the free agency now. I'll go first for the free agency. I think it's mostly going to be a pretty quiet free agency for Minnesota. I think they'll bring a few guys back, but they don't have the money to go and splash cash on any kind of big free agents. I don't think there really is any big free agents this year. It's a very 2020 free agent class, you know, with keeping in the theme of how 2020's been in every respect at the moment. So I'm going to re-sign Malik Beasley. He's going to come back on a 4-year, $48 million deal. So 12 million a year. It's only 2 million more annually than he got offered from Denver last season, that he turned down. But I think the extra guaranteed year, and which would, you know, equate to $18 million overall extra, I think that's a pretty slow, you know, market at the moment for even for Beasley, who's a pretty hot commodity, I think, in general. There's not going to be a lot of teams vying for his signature. There's not going to be a lot of teams vying for anyone's signature at the moment. So Beasley, 4 years, 48. I think he accepts that. I think that's pretty good flexibility for Minnesota. I think if he does flop and he's not the kind of player that he showed he can be, which I think is unlikely, I think he'll be at least a solid player, a good scorer, a good shooter. $12 million a year isn't hard to move if he does flop. I don't think that it's breaking the bank in any way.
I think getting Beasley 4 for $48 million would end up being highway robbery. I just have a really hard time not seeing Malik Beasley playing as well as he did down the stretch. I mean, maybe he doesn't have the same type of numbers, but the way he played, he just looked so confident and just like such a great fit that I have a hard time not seeing him being a very, very good player.
I agree with that. I think, and even if he, like you said, even if he drops off just slightly,
that's still great value.
$12 million a year. Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of players making $12 million a year that are worse than Malik Beasley. So I think they'd be pretty happy with that. And I think they've got the leverage to kind of negotiate that kind of deal.
100%.
The only worry would be a team like, I guess, Detroit coming in for him or Charlotte. I think Detroit's in rebuilding mode. I don't think they're going to pay a player, you know, $15 million a year who's not, you know, going to move the needle either way. He's probably going to be good enough where they're not really, really bad, and he's not going to be, you know, bad enough where they can become good. Like, you know what I mean? He's not going to raise them into a playoff team, and he's not going to let them become the worst team in the East, and I think they need to do one or the other. And I think Charlotte's probably in the same situation, and they're the two teams where I'd be worried, I guess, in any way that they're going to come in for Beasley.
Yeah, and I think also you have to think about the fit, too. I think he would take $1 million or $2 million or maybe even $3 million a year less to stay in Minnesota and play alongside these guys than to go commit career suicide and play in Detroit or play in Charlotte or somewhere like that. I think that his best fit is definitely in Minnesota in terms of when you look at the, you know, the potential teams that might be interested in him. I just have a hard time seeing him not coming back, even if it's a less lucrative deal than he could get somewhere else.
Yeah, and then so after Beasley, I think we'll re-sign Jordan McLaughlin, who again, I don't think teams will be, you know, clawing their eyes out to try and find a way to get Jordan McLaughlin. So a 3-year, $9 million deal, I think it is good for him. He's obviously coming off the two-way contract. He's never had a deal even close to that big in the NBA. So I think in that respect, again, you've got a bit of leverage. Minnesota are the team that he broke out with this season. So I think he obviously would see how he can fit, how he can play behind D'Angelo Russell and with him at times. I think J-Mac is just like a really solid backup point guard. I'd have no qualms about giving him, you know, $9 million overall and $3 million a year if he keeps on kicking on from what he showed in the last 30, 25 games of the season, this season, well, last season now. I think that's really good value again and something that'll really help Minnesota build. They need to build around the fringes with players who are quite cheap who can fit in alongside the expensive guys. So I think J-Mac's one of those.
Yeah, he's another guy who I just don't see him. I just don't see him not being good or playing the way that he did down the stretch of the season. And you've heard Ryan talk about it. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that understands the offense better than Jordan McLaughlin. And the fact that that's coming from a two-way player that didn't play a ton at the NBA level and didn't even really get a chance to practice and still played that well within the system alongside players he didn't get to practice with is something else. It's pretty special. And I think that just raises the floor of his game a ton. And I think that, you know, see how far he grew from people like myself tweeting that, you know, he cannot be on an NBA floor. In October or November.
Yeah, I think
maybe my second favorite guy on the team by the end of the season and just setting the world on fire was awesome to see. And I just see no signs of him slowing down.
So I'm guessing you're bringing both of those guys back as well. We may as well get into that. So what numbers have you got both
yep.
of those guys?
So I kind of was trying to make it more realistic in the sense that, you know, if I'm going to get Ibaka, that might be a little less realistic. I went with a higher number for Beasley. So I went 3 for 45, for Malik. And you know, I just think that there's going to be a sense of, you know, I really want to keep this guy from the front office that I think encourages them to throw a few extra dollars his way. And if they, I think that they probably start out with something like 11 or 12 and then work their way up. I think that they're fine paying Malik anywhere from 12 to 16 million a year. I think once you start to get into the 17, 18 range, especially with the salary cap going to come down a little bit, I think that then it becomes, you know, kind of tough and to a point where you'd have to trade Malik then if you want, you know, a third star. But you know, I thought that 15 was just a pretty safe number, I think, for what might happen. And then I did also bring McLaughlin back. You said yours was 3 for 9.
Yeah.
Mine was 3 for 7.5. So,
and I think you can get him at that as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, I don't think anybody's going to really be like, oh, that McLaughlin guy, I really want him on my team. I think that a lot of his success had to do with the fit, the really good fit that he has here and the infrastructure around him. And I think that he is also back here in December when the season starts.
Yeah. So apart from that, again, like I said, it's a pretty quiet off season. A pretty quiet free agency for Minnesota, but we are going to use our full MLE. I'm going to sign Jeremy Grant. So Grant obviously played for Denver this season, played for OKC before that in Philadelphia. He's had an up and down season kind of in Denver. He did shoot a career high 40% from three after shooting 39% last season. But minutes wise and overall production, I think he definitely wasn't at his best this season in Denver. Maybe that's the reason why you can get him at the full MLE. I think when he's at his best, he's the kind of player who might demand, you know, $12 million in a year or something in that range. But I don't think he's got a player option, so he might, maybe he, which is around $9
million. Yeah,
player option, he accepts that.
I was just going to make a comment that I think it was Shams. I'm not exactly sure. I think it was Shams that reported earlier in the year that Jeremy Grant was leaning towards declining that offer. And
yeah, that's what I had down as well. I've read other reports.
Yeah, it was Chris Haynes. So Chris Haynes reported on his podcast that Jeremy Grant is reported to have said, quote, "I'm definitely not leaning towards picking up the player option." And so I just don't think that Jeremy Grant's a great fit in Denver. I don't think that the way that they play really maximizes his play style. I think that he thrives a lot better in more up and down game on both ends of the floor. And I think that, you know, if it wasn't Ibaka for me, it would be Grant right behind him at number two. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah.
And the thing is too, is I'd love to get him with the MLE. But I wonder too, if he's looking for a little bit more of a long-term deal. But even then, like, you could still use the full MLE and sign him to three for whatever.
I think that's what I had was three for 27.2, I think it is. Okay. So
in that world, I think the pandemic kind of works for the Wolves in that situation in terms of the salary effects that the pandemic brings on, and kind of shifts some of the leverage back to teams a little bit. But if we got Jeremy Grant, man, that'd be awesome. Getting Jeremy Grant and Vassell, whew, that is,
yeah, well, as you can see, that's kind of what I'm going for. Like, I'm going for a bit more length. If I can fill that court with length and defensive, you know, off ball defense and rotation defenders, I think that'll be really good for this team. To finish off my off season, I'm just going to sign a third string point guard to the minimum. I think Minnesota can't really rely on just Russell and McLaughlin being their only point guards. Russell has had some problems with, you know, niggles over his career. He normally misses around 10 games a season at least. So I don't think you want to just throw McLaughlin to the deep end as the only point guard on the roster. So I wouldn't mind a guy like Shabazz Napier, who obviously played for Minnesota this season. I actually thought he was quite good as a backup point guard. I'm not sure if he's a minimum guy. He's always seemed to get very, you know, low contracts. He's never got paid really. Maybe his agent's pushing somewhere for a biannual exception at like $4 million or something, but I'm not sure he gets that. I'm not sure whether he wants to come back to Minnesota either. Maybe he's, you know, sour a bit from the way it ended here. But if you could get Napier, I'd be pretty happy with that. Also a guy like Gary Payton the second, I think he's just a dude who can just fill in for 10 games and play 10 to 15 minutes a game and then spend the rest of his time either sitting on the pine or in the G League. And a guy like Michael Carter Williams, who had a mini renaissance in Orlando this season. I thought he was actually quite good. He still can't shoot, but he does quite a lot of things well on the court. He'd be another good third stringer. So any of those guys, I think that's the kind of guy I'll go after just to finish off my free agency period.
Yeah, I'd love to have Shabazz back. And the other thing, too, that I think we should note is that Shabazz and D'Lo played in a two-man backcourt quite often when they played together in Brooklyn. I think Shabazz would be all in on getting the band back together. I think that, you know, most places that would look to bring him in would be a team where, you know, maybe he plays a few more minutes like he did in Washington. This year, I think that, you know, that was really more circumstance with John Wall being out. And I think that Ish Smith is really their clear cut backup point guard there. But, you know, I could see him, you know, signing with, you know, a team like the Lakers and them using him instead of Rajon Rondo or something like that. But I think if we were able to bring him back, you know, using some of that biannual exception money, that would be awesome. I would love it. You know, I really enjoyed watching him play. And think he did a lot of things well. He's surprisingly a pretty good team defender. I wasn't expecting that, but was really pleasantly surprised with how he played, you know, in Minnesota.
And he got thrown to the Wolves, you know, as the starting point guard for a lot of the season when Teague was out and when Minnesota only had one point guard at one stage and
just answered the call.
The system. Yeah, he didn't really get given many favors in terms of, you know, play style and minutes that he probably doesn't deserve, you know, 35 minutes as a player, but he was thrown to that, and I think he had a triple-double in one game. There was that Brooklyn game where he hit a few threes at the end of the game. I think it was around New Year's time, and pretty much won the game for Minnesota off his own back. So I think he's the kind of guy who just, if he's your third-string point guard and you're paying him, you know, anywhere from the biannual exception to the minimum, you're pretty bloody happy with that.
Yeah, I'd be ecstatic to bring him back in the minimum. So for mine,
so what else did you do?
So for mine, to kind of piggyback off the draft, so I needed to get two extra guys to have on two-way contracts. So I decided to bring in Mamadi Diakite, who's a senior power forward from Virginia, who's a really, really good player for them, especially on defense. That was just a really key piece of their national championship team last season. And just was a guy who showed constant improvement over his four years in Charlottesville. You know, did a lot of things really, really well. Even on the offensive end too, post up was pretty good in the post up area too. Was 59th percentile and 60th percentile on offense as a PNR role man, which is good too. And then defense was just excellent across the board, with the exception of his defense as a PNR role man. And I think that was more of because, you know, he had to play small ball five, and you know, Virginia's centers weren't really all that mobile. And so I think that was more of a byproduct of where he was than his ability. I mean, I think he projects to be more of a four at the next level, but it's just a rangy, versatile guy that can knock down threes as well. Shot 36%, shooting almost two threes a game. So a guy that can knock them down if they're open. I thought that was a pretty good pick to see if he ends up panning out as a guy you could kind of stash and hope he develops more in the G League. And then you can put in as a role man potentially. And then the other guy I signed was a combo guard from Creighton, Tyshawn Alexander. I think that Tyshawn Alexander, really, really good guy. I'd call him a synergy all-star. is what I'd call him. Yeah. His top five categories on offense were overall, transition, spot up, PNR ball handler, and isolation. All five of those he was excellent in, 85th percentile or higher. And then was also 89th percentile in cut. And then as an overall defender, 94th percentile and 92nd percentile is a PNR ball handler and 81st percentile as an isolation defender. He's a guy who can really move his feet. He's really smart about how he uses his hands, has great hands. Also a really good team defender, is a great communicator, and just a guy that was beloved by a lot of Creighton fans and just fans in general that spent a lot of time watching Big East basketball, like myself. Was just a really fun guy to watch and some guy that I think could be a fringe late second round pick based on, you know, where I'm seeing him in different boards. But if he falls, I'd love to scoop him up just because I think he's a guy that's going to stick in the NBA. He's 6'4", 200 pounds. He's a little undersized for the two, but can play the point guard. And if he did too, I think, you know, it'd be great size for a point guard and could really step in and help out on offense as a shooter. You shot 40% from three on almost seven attempts per game. So
yeah, that's a really good value.
Yeah. So a guy that would be really fun for me to see fill in two way capacity. And then, you know, obviously I said Malik and Jordan. And then this is where I started to get fun. So Serge Ibaka, obviously, but I brought Keelan back on a 2 years, $2.6 million deal. I just think that, you know, the Wolves will probably need another wing guy that they can throw in, especially if Culver or Lehman get banged up, and you need a guy that can provide a little bit of a spark offensively. I think Ryan and Gerse are still going to want to tweak the lineups a bit and throw different guys out there at times. And I don't really think there's going to be a fully set rotation. I think they're just going to want to have a bunch of bodies that they can throw in there and play if they need to. So I think that bringing Keelan back will be important, especially too with his relationship with D'Angelo Russell, I think is important as well.
And they seem to really be, like Gerson Roses and company seem to be the type of guys who really value those type of relationships with their star players.
Exactly. And if it's so low cost and it's a guy that can still provide you good value on the floor too, I think it's a no-brainer to bring him back if it's going to be that small of a contract. It could be slightly above the biannual, or excuse me, slightly above the minimum, and that's when you might have to dip into your biannual exception. But I think they'll be able to sign him to a minimum, and he'd be willing to come back on that, just because I don't really know who else, like you were saying, who else is whipping out the checkbook for Keelan Martin. And so the last move that I made then, I went all the way to Turkey in the Euro League for this one. A guy that some fans may remember from his time down at Miami, I believe is where he went to school. Shane Larkin is a guy that didn't really make a whole lot of noise when he was in the NBA. He was kind of a nomad a little bit, played for Dallas, the Knicks, the Nets, and the Celtics, one season in each spot. So didn't really stick. But boy, when he went over to Europe, did he start setting the world on fire. He played for a team called Anadolu Efes in Turkey, which is a part of the EuroLeague. And this past season, it was just phenomenal. In 25 games, averaged 22 points, four assists, three boards, a steal and a half. And get this, he shot 53% from the floor, 51% from deep on 7 attempts per game, and shot 90% from the line. So he went 53, 51, 90 on his shooting splits. And he shot almost 6 free throws a game. So he's a guy that can really get to the hole and draw fouls, but he's also just a lights out shooter that can also create for others. I thought that he would be a fun guy to bring in on some MLE money. I signed him to a 2-year, $6 million deal, and that's kind of close to what he signed in Turkey. I believe he signed he just signed a contract this offseason. I think it was like 2 for 7 or 2 for 7.5 or something like that. And he does have an NBA out in the contract. So if anybody wants to sign him, he can get out of that contract that he's in Turkey and come in and play. But it's just a guy that can shoot. I think the Wolves don't really have any really defensive minded point guards. Obviously, you know, McLaughlin played well on defense, but I wouldn't really call him a defensive minded point guard. Just because we have wings around that can help out with Josh and Jarrett and Jake Lehman as well. I think that he'd just be a really fun option to just kind of see what happens. It's a kind of really low risk, potentially somewhat high reward. That would be cool. You know, seeing a guy that's playing with that much confidence and does that well, you know, playmaking in the pick and roll, coming off screens as a shooter, screening, or, you know, different off the dribble shots with step backs and side steps and isolation threes were just some of the things that stuck out to me when I was watching his highlights. That would just be a lot of fun to see from a third string point guard that could potentially just get hot and really help swing some games. So I'd love to be a part of, you know, a comeback story like that and just see a guy that deserves another chance to get one and flourish in it. So that kind of rounded up mine, because obviously, you know, I did the sign and trade with Ibaka. I mentioned that earlier. And so that was what rounded out mine. I thought that was kind of a fun wild card to throw in there. And then the other note I had was I did waive Jacob Evans III and just assumed that a playoff team would potentially pick him up. That was kind of a lifeline throwing out into the ocean, hoping that somebody bites on it to get underneath the luxury tax.
I forgot to mention at some point I'm going to try to trade Amari Spellman for a future second if someone's willing to give up a second that takes, you know, a couple million off your cap, off your cap books as well, and potentially gets you, you know, a 50th pick in 2023 or something. Spellman, obviously, I think he showed some potential with Golden State this year. They seem to like him a little bit, but he obviously was pretty a questionable kind of tenure with Minnesota, whether he wanted to play or whether he didn't. And I think you don't lose anything by trying to ship him off for a second. You still got Reed, and in this scenario, you've still got Tilly as well.
Yeah, so, and I think he's an NBA player too. So
yeah, I think so too.
I think that, personally, I think that he should have played over Nas, but I think that there was some relationship things there that kind of got in the way.
I think he's probably better than those.
But I hope he sticks. He's a fun guy to watch in Golden State at times, and you know I think he's a guy that would be a fun throw in that could help entice a team to take him off your hands rather than keep him around. But
yeah.
So. Do you want to get into what your final team looks like?
Yeah, so my final team, obviously, I'll go through the starters first. So there's one last hot take in here. So D'Angelo Russell will start, obviously, playing around 33 minutes a game. Shooting guard will be Josh Okogie, which means Malik Beasley will be my sixth man.
Okay.
Obviously, we spoke before, I really like Beasley. I also think that he is like the stereotypical sixth man on a good team. I think Okogie obviously has his problems shooting, but he's a really good point of attack defender. We've spoken about him before. We both love Josh.
Favorite player on the
Wolves. I think in that scenario with Vassell as well and Kat and Russell, I think you're banking that you have enough 3-point shooting in the starting lineup, and in the games where, you know, you feel like you don't, you've still got Malik there to throw into the lineup. I think Malik will play more minutes than Okogie. I have Okogie here at 20 minutes and Beasley at 28. So I think Okogie's kind of there in that, I guess, Tayshaun Prince kind of role. Obviously a better player, but a better player went in Prince's, you know, Minnesota tenure. But I think in that role where he just starting lineup, he defends the best point of attack player. He tries to get some stops. He tries to get Minnesota off to a hot start defensively. And then Beasley can come in against second units and with Minnesota's second unit and just fire threes, play with a high usage. You know what I mean? He won't have to share the ball as much with Towns and Russell. And I think that's kind of wishful thinking. I'd be very surprised if Beasley doesn't start for this team next season. But in my perfect off season, I think Beasley comes in as just that gunner off the bench who can just microwave teams to death and then, you know, go from there. So that's my shooting guard rotation. McLaughlin's backing up Russell. Vassell will start at the three. He'll play around 28 minutes. He'll be backed up by Jake Layman, who'll play about 20. Aaron Gordon will start at the four. He'll be backed up by Jeremy Grant. I have 30 minutes for Gordon and 18 for Grant, but I think you could probably take a few off Gordon and give a few to Grant, you know, depending on the game, on the matchups. Grant is probably a better player than 18 minutes per night, and I don't know if you get him over, you know, if he thinks he's only going to play, you know, 20 minutes or under a night, so maybe that's a problem there. But then the center rotation will be Karl Anthony Towns. Tilly and Tilly will back him up. I had Towns at about 35 minutes, Tilly at about 13, and then your reserves, Naz Reid, Jacob Evans, Jalen Noel, the third string point guard you sign, which will go with Shabazz Napier, and then Jared Vanderbilt. For my two ways, I thought maybe you can try and bring Keelan Martin back as a two-way. I'm not sure that's something he'd want to do, but that's the kind of guy I wouldn't mind as a two-way. And Miles Powell from Seton Hall as well, who I really enjoyed watching.
Love him.
I'm pretty sure he'll go undrafted or maybe, you know, really late in the draft. But if he goes undrafted, I think he's the kind of guy you can bring in that that Keelan Martin, Jordan McLaughlin, you know, Naz Reid.
I think he's just too skilled offensively to not find somewhere in the NBA. I mean, that guy just, you know, absolutely fill it up. So much fun to watch.
Yeah. Like him or a guy like Skylar Mays or something from LSU, I think they're the kind of guys that, yeah, you take a flyer on.
Yeah, as a
two-way guy.
And especially guys that are older, too. Like, I was looking really through, you know, guys that are going to get drafted in the second round, and most of the guys that are getting drafted are not, you know, freshmen. They're guys that are a lot older.
Yeah.
Even for a guy like, you know, Cassius Stanley. Cassius Stanley is 21, or will be 21 when the season starts, because he took a post-grad year, I'm pretty sure, to go play at Sierra Canyon. And so he's even a little older. But again, like, age isn't really that big of a factor, just because all the other guys that you could potentially sign are the same age. So I hope that, you know, age isn't kind of this fixture number that the Wolves get caught up on. I know that we always talk about this timeline, but again, like, if you get a guy that's 22 now and they're going to be a solid contributor in 4 years or 5 years and they're 26 or 27, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and you see plenty of guys around the league who don't blossom until, like you said, 25, 26, and no one ever kind of considers them too old to have a good career, I guess, especially if they're, you know, them two-way guys or undrafted guys who are never going to be the star of your team. You know, you're not going to get a lot of undrafted guys who end up stars, but if you can get an undrafted guy who becomes a sixth man at 27, you'd be pretty happy with that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I'd love taking both those guys in as two-way guys.
Yeah, so what do you have in terms of
overall team? So my team, I gotta say, Jake, it's not as good as your team. But I struggled a lot with the rotations, just because I think that there's
it's really hard to leave guys.
Yeah,
out.
I kind of wanted to just go based on like what guys would be and who their direct backups would be. So I have 11 guys in the rotation. Obviously that's not going to happen. But I just kind of did it as a way to kind of lay out who's on the team, what the hierarchy is, and how that would shake out. So my starting five was D'Lo, Malik, Josh, Onyeka Okongwu, and Kat. So I had D'Lo at about 31, Malik at about 30, J.O. at 25, Okongwu at 23, and Kat at 34, just because, you know, I don't want to totally run Kat into the ground there and make sure that he's got enough time.
Yeah, and it's hard to predict the minute. It's hard to predict minutes, especially with the backups, because obviously players don't just play one position.
And it fluctuates.
Jake Layman's probably going to Jake Layman's going to play the three and the four. You know what I mean? McLaughlin might play with D'Angelo Russell at times. So this is all kind of just, you know, guessing.
Yeah, and so I had McLaughlin backing up D'Lo at 19, but I also think that I would love it if 10 of those minutes were spent playing with D'Lo, or maybe even 15 spent playing with D'Lo. And I wrote about this a while back, but that duo was one of the most statistically friendly duos that the Wolves had. And just being able to utilize D'Lo as an off-ball player and off-ball shooter is so good, moving without the ball and attacking and hunting space and getting set up. And he's got a lightning fast
and
release
too. The way McLaughlin drives seams really collapses defenses. He's so quick and he's so shifty and small, getting through gaps, and that really opens up the court for D'Lo to become an off-ball mover and shooter, which is a really big thing.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think you can find a better archetype of a point guard to put next to D'Lo. You know, I think when people talk about having LaMelo next to D'Lo or drafting LaMelo, I actually think LaMelo would be a pretty terrible fit here.
I agree.
Just because I think D'Lo needs a guy that can crash and pass and like you said, just drive the seams and find open guys, which he does. And so I'd love to see them play together more. But I had Jared Culver at the two, playing about 20 minutes a game. I know that, you know, some people might draw the ire of some people, but, you know, I'd love to see Jared Culver, you know, expand his game more and be better on the offensive end to keep him on the floor for more minutes.
And I think he will. I honestly do think he will. I know I've traded him and he's in Orlando at the moment, but I do think that Culver would be, I think he's at least worth 20 minutes. You have to give him the leash to improve. And if you're going to draft him sixth overall, you can't stick him in a 12 minute a game role than any second season.
Right, exactly. So that's why I had him up at 20. I had Layman at about 13, 15 minutes a game. Just because I think depending on matchups, he kind of gets iced out a little bit with, you know, Malik and Josh and Jarrett. You kind of get crowded on the wing there. And then especially if you're having Onyeka Okongwu, a rookie, you're going to want to play a lot more. And I have Serge Ibaka at about 23, 25 minutes a game as the backup four. And then Naz Reid is the backup five at like 8 minutes a game. I don't think Naz is going to play a ton.
I think that bench is really good, but like that's the type of bench that comes in and builds leads, not, you know, gives them up.
Yeah, and especially if Culver, I think this whole entire bench rides on Culver. If Culver can take a step forward, I think the bench gets a lot better. And you have a five, you can play a five out offense, and all five guys on that team won't be afraid to shoot a three, which would be a lot of fun. And then I had Larkin as my backup point guard. I think especially in this Wolves system, or the backup to the backup point guard. I think that, you know, the Wolves are going to want to play two point guards out there at the same time, just considering that D'Angelo is such a good off-ball player as well. And I think they'd be foolish not to totally maximize their second star. And you know, McLaughlin, if McLaughlin, most of his minutes were spent playing with D'Lo, and then you had Larkin as more of a true backup point guard that ran the show for the second unit, I think that would be fine too. But I also understand the fact that nobody knows the offense better than McLaughlin does. And having that as your lead guard for your backups is also really important. So, you know, I can really be convinced either way, but I do think that this team needs a third point guard, and that third point guard is going to play a significant amount.
If you don't give Larkin, you know, a small chunk of your MLE, obviously it's not huge money, but if you don't give him $6 million over two, I don't think there's any reason why you shouldn't at least, you know, give him a shot to prove that he can play minutes consistently.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, D'Angelo is probably not going to play 75 games in a season. And so having two guys like that, Larkin, I think, could step in right away and be a true backup point guard and have McLaughlin run the starting unit. If D'Lo were out or took a game off or something like that, you'd still be fine. And I think, too, you'd worry a little bit about how the offense would work with a second unit. But I think having guys like Lehman and Ibaka that are both just really smart and make the right plays a lot of the time would fit well with a strong offensive point guard and McLaughlin or Larkin, and then kind of two wild cards in Culver or Reed. I think that, you know, if Culver or Reed are kind of are reined in and they're playing within the offense and they're playing complementary basketball, I think that bench could be really, really good. And would, like you said, would build leads instead of squander them, which was just such a bad problem for the Wolves this year.
I'm so sick of saying that.
Yeah, but I could also be convinced into, you know, having Jake Lehman start or Jarrett Culver start and putting Malik on the bench. I think that would be really fun. Having a Shane Larkin and Malik Beasley backcourt would be a lot of fun. But the main reason I had Culver on the bench with Lehman was just, I think that having two solid wing defenders out there with a guy like Ibaka, so having three really solid wing defenders really out there, with Ibaka being able to switch down or up depending on what you need him for. You know, I don't know how much better of a defender Naz Reid's going to be next year than he was this year. I think he took huge strides forward from, you know, when he got drafted to the end of the year, and hopefully he can get better. You know, we saw flashes of him making outstanding or defensive plays, and obviously, you know, that kind of got overshadowed by some of his foul trouble problems. But I just think that if Naz can become even a slightly negative defender, that he could really find a good role as a backup five. And so that whole bench kind of just rides on Culver, really. To see how much better they'll be or how much worse they'll be. So but overall, just a really, really fun exercise that was a lot more difficult than you might think. I think, you know, you can look at some of your team and be like, wow, why'd you do that? Or look at something I did and just said, wow, that guy's an idiot. But if any of you guys want to try and do it and tell us how yours went, you know, I'd be all ears for it. And it's just such a fun exercise to see how it could shake out. And especially trying to keep it realistic too. Like, we all have our pipe dreams, but I mean, a lot of them just aren't realistic. And so I don't know. I challenge all the listeners to come up with your best ones and hit Jake and I up on Twitter and talk to us about what you got.
For sure. And you can hit Jack up at JRBorman13 on Twitter. So I think that'll probably do it for today. Like you said, it was a super fun exercise. I had a ton of fun doing this, and Now we just have to sit back and wait for none of these things to come true at all.
Yeah, for us to get, the seventh pick in the lottery, miss out on Vassell and take and just totally reach on somebody. I can't wait for it to feel like Wolves basketball again.
Yeah, but yeah, thanks again, Jack, for coming on. I'm sure I'll have you back. It's always really good to have a chat with you, and to everyone else. Thanks for listening. Follow, subscribe, review, rate, whatever floats your boat. And I'll see all of you guys next week. Thanks, Jack.
Yep, thanks, Jake.